Get money back if your horse is a non-runner for all Cheltenham Festival races. Paddy Power.
So, good evening and welcome to a very different version of The Road to Cheltenham. Our anchor Lydia Hislop has taken herself away on holidays. I had assumed she would have Lord Luck sorted to cover for her, but he is in Bahrain or somewhere else in the Middle East. So, we have pulled the real ace from the Racing TV pack, and Gary O'Brien has joined me this evening. Gary, welcome to The Road to Cheltenham.
Thanks, Ruby. Great to be here. Naturally, I'm honoured to be standing in for Lydia while she takes a well-deserved break. And even though I'm only a caretaker, I promise I'm going to give it my best shot.
Yeah, well, I'm looking forward to it. At least I'm not scared for once. So that's usually a start for me. But look, I think we're going to jump straight into it and we'll go back to last weekend and we'll start with Newbury. And I think we should start with the novice handicap chase, which Brave Man's Game won. And we're going to put him in a split screen versus the Denman chase, which El Dorado Allen won. Now, obviously, it was quite hard to get the start of this race exact because of the angle they came at for El Dorado Allen's race. But you'll see when they jump off, we've got it pretty right. There's only 0.32 of a second between them when they finish. And Gary, were you surprised that the Denman chase managed to get itself so far in front of the novice handicap chase?
I wasn't sure what to make of that, Ruby. Brave Man's Game just seemed to be racing within himself in the novice handicap chase, whereas obviously the horse that won the Denman chase was going, seemed to be going a decent lick up front. So maybe there was a hint of that. I don't know. I think in the overall times, there was very little in the end, wasn't it?
No, very little in it. I mean, halfway down the back, you can see El Dorado Allen is well in front of Brave Man's Game. And even when Imperial Aura injects pace to the cross fence, they're a long way in front of Brave Man's Game. So he obviously runs very impressive fractions on the way home, or El Dorado Allen has slowed down. It's one or the other, but it's still a good performance from Brave Man's Game in essentially a handicap.
That's it. And it was a bold call. I think everybody was pleased to see him run in the handicap. Paul Nichols, not afraid to, I suppose, roll the dice and perhaps set him a stiffer task, particularly when the horses were out of form. I don't know about you. Would you have thought there would ever have been a doubt in his mind about letting him run one of his top horses when the yard was out of sorts?
Definitely. It would have crossed his mind. But Paul Nichols is nothing if not brave. And I still think when you look at the other horses of his that ran at the weekend, they can't have been so far out of form and 7 days later be in peak condition. So you'd have to think Brave Man's Game is going to improve from what he did last weekend. But before we get onto the novices and go further into those, if we just stick with El Dorado Allen for a minute, he's in the Ryanair. There is talk of maybe supplementing him for a Gold Cup. If he was yours, Gary, which way would you go?
Well, if he was mine and I wasn't short of a few quid, I think I'd have to go for the Gold Cup, Ruby. It looks an open year. He's opened a few new doors for himself. I think it's a bit like conflated, isn't it, as well? I would view him as exactly the same. I know people have said the Ryanair is a real option for conflated now, but to me, both owners aren't short of a few quid. I don't think Michael O'Leary and Terry Warner, you never know when you're going to get a chance to go for gold again. Alaho would be a very, very tough nut to crack, I think, in the Ryanair anyway. So if it was me and I had the few quid in my back pocket and obviously picked up a nice few quid at the weekend, that's where I'd be going.
And of the place horse at the weekend, Royal Pagai, would the new course at Cheltenham 3.25 miles, but that's, I think it'd suit him better. Would you be of the same opinion?
Yeah, I thought he ran pretty well. Maybe there wasn't as much of an accent on stamina, perhaps, as he would have ideally liked. It's difficult, I suppose, to get out of your head what happened in the Gold Cup last year, but I think he did come back with a problem that day, so probably unwise to judge him too harshly. He's looked in great form this season. Obviously, the stable's having a tremendous time, he thinks. Softer the ground, the better for him, obviously, at Cheltenham. I think his connections will be going there with plenty of optimism.
Yeah, and they've even mentioned, I think, the Grand Steep to Paris at Auteuil in May as an option for him after Cheltenham as well. But look, that was all we had really on the conditions chase front or the Gold Cup distance last weekend anyway. So we'll drop back to the other part of that split screen, which was Brave Man's Game. And if we take his race in isolation, Gary, I've harped on about his jumping since he ran in Newton Abbott and then watched him in Haydock again at Kempton. And we can watch him at Newbury. He was very good at the first fence. But at the fourth fence, he shows just how much scope he has. I couldn't believe when I froze this at the weekend how far back in the fourth fence he actually stood.
No, that was a joy to watch. And I actually wanted to ask you about this as well, because we'll see, I presume you've got it in the clip as well, when he comes around the following time, Harry Cobden is looking for that big jump out of him again, and the horse puts in the extra stride and just tells him no. what would be going through the horse's mind there? Would it be a case of maybe he's obviously run and jumped that bit more into the race, energy levels wouldn't be quite so high?
No, I think it's a case of Braised Man's Game basically saying to Harry Cobb that I know what I'm at, you just leave me alone. Horses, I often got that feeling when you ride one as good as him, that you literally just sit behind them and keep the pressure on, I suppose, with your legs. Harry Cobden rides with a good depth of leg, so he can keep his legs either side of Brave Man's Game and just keep the pressure on. But Brave Man's Game knows what he's going to do himself. He's not a horse that has to be helped to jump, as people would say. And I think at championship level, look, you saw him, as you say, Gary, putting down at the fourth last, and he really came from at the third last, and he was always doing enough from there home. But at championship level, if you can ride the race and the horse does the jumping, it makes it an awful lot easier to ride them. And that could be a huge asset, I would think, to Brave Man's Game going forward. Now, we do have a few social comments in around Brave Man's Game. Obviously, you know, my status in social media, I'm such a driver of all those things. We got lots of responses this week. But Dave DeBow Carter said, Cheltenham course is different gravy, though. Will he be as good up that hill? Would Cheltenham worry you for him, Gary?
I don't think so necessarily. Was he just beaten by a couple of better horses on the day last year? I don't have any concerns about the track for him personally. I don't know whether Saturday necessarily told us a great deal more about him though, did it?
No, I don't think so either. And that ties into Dennis O'Connell's question. Super jumper, however, I can still see in my mind's eye the way he folded when Bob Olinger pushed the pedal on the home turn last year. I'd be inclined to agree with you, Gary. I think that was the speed of a 2.5 mile hurdler.
Did he really fold? He was just more, I thought he just kept on at the one pace rather than folding.
Exactly. I think up and trip, bigger jumps, that'll definitely suit him. And Mike Morley has said, same can be said about Gallop and Deschamps. I'm not sure why, Mike.
Thought he came up the hill well enough. Also be with a couple of stone in hand.
I thought the very same, Gary. I thought the very same. But we'll move on from the staying chasers and we'll go to Edward Stone of Warwick, Gary. Back the 2 mile division. He made himself favourite for the Arkle. Were you impressed with him?
To be honest, I was. I think he's an impossible horse not to like, Ruby. I think he's the best price 2-1 for the Arkle now. 150 rated hurdler. He's up to 159 over fences now. His jumping, a bit like Brave Man's Game, it's a slightly different technique, but it's a really impressive part of his army as well. See, early on in the race, he's very good at the fourth fence. Brave Shaska makes quite a serious error at that one. And having sat in third position in the early part of the race, real good jump at the seventh, takes him almost upsides at the next fence. And then it's really going into the home turn where Tom Cannon has a look behind. And I would imagine he's looking for third time lucky Dan Skelton's horse and wondering, was he going to be sitting on his tail? Probably pleasantly surprised that he wasn't right behind him at that stage. And that's where he decides to really inject a bit of pace and send Edward Stone on about his business. And the two jumps he produced over those last two fences, Ruby, when the chips were down and the gun was put to his head, so to speak, I was very impressed by that. And the thing that struck me was you could very easily see Tom Cannon utilising, I think, those sort of tactics at Cheltenham as well, provided, obviously, he gets the right setup there too.
Yeah, he does look a pretty straightforward horse to ride. Were you a little disappointed with Third Time Lucky or more maybe excited by Edwardstone?
I think it was a combination of both. I did think there'd be pretty little between them. Maybe it came a little bit too soon for Third Time Lucky after his run at Doncaster. Maybe he was a bit flat. Looks as though he's not going to go to Cheltenham there. But I couldn't knock the winner. I was pretty impressed by what I saw. And he seems to be really in a good vein of form at the moment. So he's going to go to Cheltenham, I think, with a big chance.
Is he a patriotic favourite though, or a worthy favourite?
I'd say he's a worthy favourite based on what I've seen. He can only beat what's put in front of him over there. And I think he's beaten maybe the best of the British novices with a little bit more to spare, say, than the likes of Blue Lord have done in Ireland. Blue Lord, I know, is still unbeaten over fences, but I think you and I both felt Riviere d'Etel would have won the Irish Arkle had she jumped the last a bit better. Might have got it in the Stewards as well on another day. So I just think maybe that's perhaps contributing to his position at the top of the market, but I don't know. I just still feel maybe there might be something there to beat him.
Yeah, well, we'll come back to that again in a while as we answer our social poll, which got a record number of votes. Easy, no, Lydia didn't set that question. But obviously, last week as well, Gary, at Kempton last Friday, Elixir de Nuts. I don't know if he put himself in the Arkle picture, but he was a decent hurdler, 144 rated. He won over 2 miles and 2 furlongs for Brendan Powell and the Tizzards in the same Warner colours as El Dorado Allen. I thought it was plenty to like about him too. He was very good at the first fence, and now he gets around the corner, he gets tight and brushes the second fence, but then he flies the third, which kind of replicated his jumping for most of the race, which was very accurate and very low. It was a novice handicap. He was in off a good mark. Now he gets back around to the second last and he hits that a really good wrap. But I love the way he picked up then and galloped from the second last all the way to the nine. He's subsequently gone to a rating of 143. He was 144 over hurdles. But this race, or the Arkle, Gary, does look wide open. And could there be value in a horse like Elixir the Nuts, or maybe even the next horse you mentioned, like a CL Lineage?
Yeah, I think there could be. And it's that sort of year. It's a bit like the Gold Cup, what we were talking about earlier on. Because it has that open look to it, I don't think there is a standout candidate. I don't know about you, I'd be expecting maybe a double-figure field this year, which you don't always get in the Arkle. I mean, CL Denege, I like what I've seen from him over fences so far. He wouldn't have obviously got to quite the level that Edward Stone did over hurdles. He was rated 140 in that discipline. Edward Stone was 10 pounds higher, and they did actually meet in the county hurdle at Cheltenham, and Edward Stone beat him in and around three lengths, giving him weight as well. But again, here at Punchestown on Sunday, Ruby, I liked what I saw. He seems to have taken to jumping fences really well. He's less exposed, obviously, than Edward Stone as well. This was just his third chase start. One thing you would say, obviously, he's been campaigned at a lower level. He kicked off in the beginners and he's run into rated novice chases since then. But from an early part of the race, this did just fall apart a little bit, you'd have to say. The second fence, you raised me up, it had been very easy to back before the race, made a mistake, and all of a sudden there's a bit of a fracture and you've got four horses who are well clear of the rest, and in truth they never looked like coming back to them. Four out, one of the dangers disappears, Take All seems to land really awkwardly and falls, gets rid of Kevin Sexton. The winner, CL Denege, he does get out jumped two out by Joseph O'Brien's horse, Fire Attack, but he's quickly back on an even keel. Mark Walsh sends him on about his business around the home turn. And this was the part of the race I really liked, Ruby. Coming down to the last, he settles the issue in a few strides. Yes, he's going to be, if he does take his chance in the Arkle at Cheltenham, taking on much better horses than those he faced here on Sunday. But he settles the issue in a few strides. Good jump at the last. And away he goes. And looks as though he's got a bit left in the locker coming up the run in as well. So I like the way he's improving run to run. Weather connections decide the Arkle is worth a shot. They might maybe fancy their chances in the handicap. He's up to 148 in Ireland after the Punchestown race, remains to be seen. But if he did pitch up, he's not one I'd be putting a line through.
No, I don't think so. I think there's plenty of value to be found in this race. Some of those near the top are not going to perform, and something towards the exterior of the market even is definitely going to crop up. But Kevin KS 113 at Kevin with a whole load of numbers and letters after that inquired on social media, and he reminded people to go back to the Supreme that Shishkin won, and CL Nunez was running all over the field when brought down at the second last. He is no back marker in the Arkle. He's no back marker in the Arkle, but that was actually Elixir Danny Kevin, not CL Nunez.
I remember it
unfortunately.
Well.
What's that?
I remember it well, rather painfully as well.
Oh, somebody had a few quid on Elixir that day, perhaps. They were the 2 mile novices that ran last weekend. Obviously, there was the Game of Spirit as well at Newbury last Saturday, which was won by Funam Blue Sivola. I just about managed to get that name out. I'm very sorry to Venetia Williams. I'm stumbling over for the last 4 days. And Charlie Dyche are having an incredible year. But again, look, we have the big three in the Champion Chase, Shishkin, Energami, Shaq and Poursois. Is there room for something to sneak in there or get into the money at a biggest price? And could it be this fella?
Well, I mean, I think there is potentially, Ruby, but I don't know necessarily would it be Funam Bule de Sivola. He's a horse that tends to obviously race up on the speed. He jumped very well, I thought, at the weekend, dominated that race from a long way out. But a small field there, it'll be a bigger field at Cheltenham, even if the big guns do frighten a few away. My view of something was to creep into the places, maybe at a bigger price. It's more likely to be something ridden from further back, maybe that stays out of the heat of battle. But again, it's another big win for Venetia Williams and what's been a fantastic season. And even though, obviously, we're talking about the Cheltenham Festival here, it's about the road to Cheltenham as well. And he's bagged the big prize on Saturday. So I doubt his connections will be too disappointed if he comes up short there.
No, I wouldn't think so. He's a very low, accurate jumper. I think Charlie Dyche does a wonderful job on his back, the way he rides him, always with a hold of his head, because Funam Bule Sivola barely gives the fences enough height. He's very French, very accurate, very quick. And I thought it was a good performance. Gary, obviously the feature at Newbury last Saturday was the Betfair hurdle. It went the way of glory and fortune. But do you look at this is that a compliment to Epitant and therefore a compliment to Honeysuckle, or is it a bit of a worry for the standard of the English novices that were behind them?
I view it as a compliment maybe to Epitant, and I think Connections of This Horse pointed out after the race on Saturday, maybe people had underestimated him and didn't believe what they'd seen at Kempton, because he ran pretty well and maybe got a bit closer to Epitant than you might have expected that day, and it wasn't reflected in his price for Saturday's race. But if we have a look back through Saturday's Big Bet for Hurdle Ruby, I was very impressed by the way he travelled through it. He jumps off near the back, but by the fifth hurdle, without Stan Shepherd really having to ask the horse too many questions, he's jumped his way into midfield. And then as we arrive at the third last fence, the third last hurdle, the first one in the home straight, all of a sudden he's in front. And as I say, he doesn't appear to have expended too much energy getting there, for all that he's maybe raced a touch with the choke out. I thought Stan Shepherd did well at that point, because he could have, I suppose, let him mosey on from there home, but it's a long way up that home straight at Newbury, and he doesn't press the button until he gets over the second last hurdle. Then he sends him on about his business. Maybe even that was a little bit earlier than ideal, but despite a mistake at the last, he was always, I thought, just doing enough to hold on from I Like To Move It, who was more prominent in the race. I thought he had a really good run round. I don't know about you, I didn't think there was too many excuses for him. The winner just had that bit more tactical speed to take a couple of lengths out of him before he came back, and I thought he was good value for the win.
Yeah, I did too. I even thought that Dorian Fortune came from plenty far back off what I thought was not an overly brisk pace. I thought I'd Like To Move It was in a much better position to actually win the race, but I probably tend to agree with you. It does boost Epitant's form, and when you tie Epitant in with Honeysuckle, it's starting to give a little bit of credit to maybe how good she is. I know a lot of people are arguing that it's a weak division, but when you tend to get one extremely good racehorse, they do scare a lot of the opposition out of that division.
That's it. And we were talking there about the Champion Chase and maybe something picking up the pieces and finishing in the frame, whereas Funambule de Sivile is perhaps more likely to be in the heat of battle. This is a horse who, in all probability, going to be coming from further back in the field. Still a bit of a stretch, I suppose, to see him making the frame, even if the Champion Hurdle does break up a bit. He's gone up to a rating of 148 after Saturday, but he's in the mix, I think, maybe to pick up a few of the scraps there with horses like Tommy's Oscar, maybe, who's coming into it on a bit of a roll as well.
Exactly. Tommy's Oscar has split like Glory and Fortune has come through handicaps to do that. Well, that is a look back at most of what happened in Newbury and some of the weekend action in Ireland. But next up, we're going to look at the novice hurdlers. So as promised, we're going to discuss the novice hurdlers. There wasn't a huge deal of action last weekend on the novice hurdle front, but at Naas, Gary, Journey With Me for Henry de Bromhead in the Rob Core colours, carried by Bob Bollinger, made his second appearance. I'm not sure it blew me away. What did you think?
No, definitely would agree. And this is a horse I like now. A lot of people have drawn similarities between himself and Bob Ballinger just because of the route he's taken up to this point, although he didn't take in the grade one at Naas, obviously, that Bob Ballinger did. But it looks as though he might be headed the same way, Ruby. First thing to say about Saturday's race, the start. Nobody wants to go on. This is a horse who's raced up on the pace in all his previous races when he won a point-to-point in his bumper and his maiden hurdle. This time around, it looked as though Rachel Blackmore and Henry de Bromhead and the owners, Rob Cord, probably had a chat about things and decided they want to settle him in behind. So that's what they do, but it's an absolutely funereal pace over the first few hurdles, to the point that it looked to me as though Rachel just decided, right, I'm going to go on at the fourth, allowed him to stride on. I don't think it was necessarily that the horse took her there. And from that point on, I suppose we see a better Journey With Me. He's allowed to use that long stride of his. In the main, he jumps pretty well. By the time they get into the home straight, he looks to have everything in behind maybe covered, but two out. And I always think in front, going to two out at Naas is never a bad place to be. But at two out, he just pecks on landing and all of a sudden has to be roused to the long. Martin Brazel's mare in behind Choice of Words was trying to make a race of it at that stage. But you'd be impressed by the way he pulls away from that one, going to the last, jumps it well. Strong through the line, which you would expect, I suppose, given the very, very slow early fractions. But I don't know about you, Ruby. I can't help feeling this is a horse we're going to see to better effect the further he goes. He strikes me as a real staying type of horse. I know Connections have said that the Ballymore is his most likely port of call, and you can understand where they're coming from. I just wonder if Cheltenham this year was the be-all and end-all, I think he'd be in the Albert Bartlett. But I just think they're taking a longer-term view with him and maybe adopting the view that the Ballymore maybe might set him up for a good future, either whether it's over hurdles or more likely fences next season.
Yeah, I tend to agree. I don't think he has that raw speed maybe that Bob Ollinger has, that Bob Ollinger showed to pass Braveman's game last year. I would tend to agree with you, Journey. I mean, he looks more like a galloper, because to me at Leopardstown, he just out-galloped and outstayed Kilcrutt with Manila Crooner staying on, and that made an hurdle. I thought O'Toole was probably disappointing in Nailstew there, given his bumper form last year where he split Sir Gerhard and Kilcrutt at Punchestown. I think he's had to way underperform, but I'd agree with you. I think it looks like a longer-term plan with Journey with me, and I'm not sure he has the speed for a Ballymore, if I'm really honest.
I was surprised they didn't make more use of O'Toole, were you?
I was a little bit surprised, yeah. It was a messy race, and everyone seemed to be trying to force Rachel into going on, but I think when you get in front at the right time in Ace, it can often be hard to get back past someone, and I'm often surprised why fewer people opt to make the run in there. Personally. Anyway, on the other front, last Thursday at Hunting Inn, we had the Sydney Banks Memorial Novice Hurdle, where LA Bell ran for the Skeletons. Now, she's dropped in right at the back, Gary. She was obviously a pretty decent bumper mare, and she travels quite well. She was slightly awkward at the third hurdle, but if we watch her again away from the sixth hurdle, she's travelling really well. Now, I like her style of racing for the Parnell Properties Mayor's Novice Hurdle, because it has a race that has being won by horses coming from off the pace. And this mare shows she can come from off the pace. Off the home turn, the dash is on, and she has a real grab at the second last. There's still a couple of minutes of chance down to the last, where she battles well to beat Gentleman at Arms in the run-in, but Wonderwall falls and brings down Harbour Lass. It was a tough performance. It looked a steadily run affair, and she showed enough gears to win, but her style of racing for that mare's novice hurdle at Cheltenham suits the race, I think. Would you look at how horses are ridden when you're looking at races that have trends like that mare's novice hurdle?
Oh, definitely. And I think based on what we saw over in the bumper at Cheltenham last year, this to me reminded me of that particular race, but she was well back that day, albeit in a much bigger field. And I thought did really well to come through late on, finish third. No threat on the day to the two Willie Mullins horses, Sir Gerhard and Kilcrutt. But this was a really messy affair. As you say, she had a few gears to pick up in the straight. We lose two at the final flight. I don't know what the form is going to be worth, but I think that turn of foot that she possesses could be a potent enough weapon late on in the mare's novice hurdle. But it looks a warm race this year. Willie Mullins got a lot of nice mares for that one, Ruby. Dino Blue is one I particularly like, but you could name four or five of his, I think, couldn't you?
I was just going to ask you which one of Willie's you liked. Obviously, you have Allegory de Vassi, Brandy Love, Dino Blue, then you have L.A. Bell. I thought Party Central, Gary, won with a lot in hand at Leopardstown when she won the Mayor's Handicap Hurdle. And getting a lead, seems to suit her. I think she could outrun her odds, actually.
Strong traveller, ran very well, split a couple of good mares of Willie's in the bumper at the Dublin Racing Festival the previous year as well. It looked a no-brainer, didn't it, to go for the handicap? I know they had her declared for the race. Allegory de Vassi won at Ferry House the week earlier. I don't know, maybe they were just testing the water to see what was declared. I can't remember the official reason why she came out, but I think they made the right call in the end.
Yeah, she did win off a rating of 121. She has jumped considerably since that, but she will be another big runner there. But that was about it on the novice hurdle front from last weekend. But I suppose juveniles, they are novices, even though their braces are not branded as novices. And Gary, I think we had more action in the line of Fred Winter horses, maybe, than Triumph horses. And Brazil is the first one we'll pick up at Nace last Saturday.
That's it. It's a rated novice hurdle, this one at Nace. And the first point to make here, Ruby, is that Brazil was very well back this day. And that also coincided with a change in tactics. Three previous runs over hurdles, he'd been held up each time. This time around, he jumps off upsides with Willie's horse, Faye, down to the first, gives it plenty of air. From that point on, he jumps pretty well in the main, albeit he's more or less allowed to do his own thing on the front end. In truth, it was a largely uneventful race, this. He was able to just amble around on the front end. By the time they get into the straights, Mark Walsh is able to just ask him for a little bit more, and all of a sudden, race is over in a few strides. He goes to the line very strongly indeed. On the face of things, if you're just looking at it visually, it looks pretty impressive. He's won by a wide margin. The handicapper was impressed too, put him up a stone to a new mark of 133. He's a very well-bred horse, former Ballydoyle inmate, full brother to Capri, who won the Irish Derby and the St. Ledger, obviously. But I would just take this form with a bit of a pinch of salt, Ruby. I don't know about you. Padraig Roach was saying afterwards there's no guarantees he'll be headed to Cheltenham. And my impression, for what it's worth, is that maybe this race was a bit more of a priority for him than a couple of those in behind. They might have been more using it as a stepping stone, maybe.
So tread carefully is what you're telling us, Gary. We will indeed. The other horse that won last week was HMS Seahorse of Paul Nolan's, who won a maiden hurdle at Fairy House. Now, he had been third behind Pied Piper and Vauban at Punchestown on his first start and then ran into the tight terms of Gordon Elliott's. He sits off the pace here in third place. Sixth hurdle, he nods, but he gets, you know, pretty much into the fray off the home turn to the second last, where he's a little untidy and he really has a battle on as Global Export comes at him going to the last hurdle. He jumps that okay and battles well to win. Now, that's on the inside track at Fairy House. Most people will think when you go in, it has to get sharper. And whilst it does get sharper at Fairy House, I think that inside track requires more stamina than the outside course for whatever reason. I think they get racing way earlier. And I thought it was a tough performance, but his jumping will have to improve considerably for my money if he's going to be a Fred Winter horse. But Gary, we obviously have seen horses being beaten that are slightly more of interest than the winners last weekend. Have you a couple of more maybe for the Fred Winter? Lydia will love this if you do.
Well, it's a race Gordon Elliott loves to target, Ruby, isn't it? And he's got a lot of, I think, potential candidates this year. We saw one of them finishing behind Brazil in the Nace race, a horse called Ebisari. He'd beaten a horse of Willie's, adamantly chosen, first to met over hurdles down at Cork. Adamantly chosen, had finished second to Gringo Dobrell previously. And you're obviously trying to maybe make an educated guess as to what sort of mark they're going to come up with for these horses. Gringo Dobrell is the only one of those three who has a rating. He's got an Irish mark of 130. So maybe in and around an Irish mark of 130 might be about right for Ebisari, who I think is definitely a lot better than he showed at Nace on Saturday. And Willie's horse, Adamantly Chosen, who bolted up in a weak race at Thurles, though obviously he's an older horse. Couple of other Elliott ones, the Tide Turns, obviously he beat HMS Seahorse in the maiden hurdle at Punchestown, thought he ran well enough in the grade one after. I don't know whether the Boodle's Fred Winter is necessarily the plan for him. Britska was another one, a bit like Ebisari, won first time out, has come up short a couple of times since then, but you get the feeling maybe Gordon Elliott was even talking about the Fred Winter for him after he won his maiden hurdle that day, so he made no secret of it. And then you've got this horse of Willie's, Ruby, at the top of the market, who I know very little about, but plenty of people are talking about. You might be able to tell us about him.
Yeah, Gaelic Warrior obviously hasn't run in Ireland yet, has had three runs in France, I think all at Auteuil. But I can tell you he's dark, Gary. He's bay. Dark.
Proper brown. Dark horse.
Proper dark. Dark brown.
That's anyway, all we're getting.
That's all we're getting because I haven't sat in him and I've watched him working, but the screw most certainly hasn't been turned. But look, that's where we are in our honorary mention of the Boodle's Fred Winter in the absence of Lydia Hislop. But we'll be back with the Mayor's Division next. So the next section on tonight's show is the Mayor's Division, both the Mayor's Chase and Hurdles, and Mrs. Paddy Power and the Mayor's Hurdle at the Cheltenham Festival. But we're going to start with the Chasers, Gary. Obviously, Zambella won at Utoxeter at the weekend where she made all. She's a very solid jumper under Jordan Naylor to bring up her third victory this season. She's had five runs, or two defeats have come up the twice she's run over 2 miles. But look, she was 7-4 on last Saturday. She won more like a 1-7 shot. She's a very solid jumper and she's a very good and a very good stayer. Now, the mare she beat at Aintree was Ellie May of Willie Mullins's, and you watched her winning at Nace, Gary.
I did, and I think you'd have to say you didn't see the real Ellie May for whatever reason that day at Aintree, Ruby. The weather was absolutely awful that day, and Ellie May isn't the most robust of mares to look at physically. I don't know whether that played its part. Maybe she just got out the wrong side of bed that day, but to me, that was well below what she was capable of. This race on Saturday, it looked a penalty kick the Opera had chased. Her only real rival on paper at the entry stage was Mount Ida. Connections opted to give it a swerve with her. One thing worth pointing out, and I'll come back to this with you in a second, is that Willie Mullins put the cheek pieces on her for the first time and a tongue tie. Mark Walsh sensibly kept it simple, and it was a bit like Brazil's win in the opening race. It was largely uneventful. She dominated the race from the front. Did jump to her right a touch on the way round at one or two junctures, but that doesn't really bother me as much as it would some other people, to be honest. I think when she went right at Cheltenham last year, it was more to do with Colerivi jumping across her path. And when they're coming into the straight, it's all over, really, bar a fall. Mark Walsh is all angles covered. He has a bit of a look over his shoulder after getting over the final fence, able to coast home. As Stepping Stones prep races go for the Mayor's Chase at the Cheltenham Festival, it looked just about, I suppose, perfect for me, Ruby, in terms of she didn't have a hard race. It should have boosted her confidence. She finished with her ears pricked, as you would expect. I think she went off 13-2 on. But what was the thinking behind the headgear? Willie Mullins doesn't like putting headgear on horses too often. He put the cheek pieces and the tongue strap on. And why Saturday? Why wait until maybe Cheltenham?
I don't know why not wait until Cheltenham, but I do think the cheek pieces were put on to give her more encouragement jumping. She did jump a fraction slow behind Mount Ida at Fairy House, and she had jumped slowly behind Zambella at Aintree. So I'd imagine that was just to keep the pressure on her jumping. As for the tongue tie, well, he put one on Kilcrut and he won a furlong. So, you know, tongue ties could become a thing of fashion in Clough Sutton now, Gary. Having gone on both of those and they've won, you could see them on quite a few until they start losing and then they'll all come off again. But look, we have the entries too for the mares. The Mrs. Paddy Power Mayor's Chase at the Festival Concertista is your favourite. Ellie May, Mount Ida. Any idea, is she going to go there, Gary, or the other plans for her at the festival?
Sounds like it. I mean, I wouldn't have been shocked if Connections threw their hat into the ring for the Gold Cup with her in such an open year. I think she does have that entry still, but it looks as though the Grand National is her big longer-term goal. And maybe the feeling is that the Mayor's Chase might be a better route to take to the Grand National than a Gruner, which she'd almost certainly have in the Gold Cup. She pulled off that incredible win last year under Jack Kennedy, coming from miles back in the Kim Muir, wasn't it? She'll need to jump an awful lot better, but she does look a better mare this season. And I think Gordon Elliott has said that they've sorted out one or two issues with her, and that seems to translate onto the track as well. She's another one that's obviously beaten Ellie May this season.
Yeah, exactly. Look, it's not a massive entry for that Mayor's Chase at the festival. Only the 15 entries, but there's plenty of quality in there. Gin Online, Put the Kettle On, Zambella. You know, there's plenty of decent horses in there. What is your view on this Miss Paddy Power Chase, Gary? Do you think it's an addition or a subtraction?
I wouldn't be mad about it personally. I think it's, I can understand what it brought it in, because they're looking to boost the mares program, encourage people to have more mares in training. And it was a good race last year. I enjoyed it as a spectacle. Colerivi and Ellie May. Colerivi obviously showed the form in a very good light then when beating some very, very high-profile rivals at the Punchestown Festival. Overall, though, I personally wouldn't have brought the race in myself. I think, or if you were going to bring it in, you could have maybe run it at one of the other Cheltenham meetings. But look, hopefully we'll have a good spectacle at least once again.
Yeah, I think it looks competitive and hopefully it will be a good spectacle. But as we move forward onto the Mayor's Hurdle, the only, I suppose, race of interest around that was at Warwick last Saturday, and that revolved around Marie's Rock, White Hot Chili Filly, Indefatigable and Get a Tonic. And Aidan Coleman obviously took over on Marie's Rock up at Warwick, and he sat in dead last on her and was very confident on her. You can see as they get to the sixth hurdle, Aidan Coleman is still happy to be last of four, the third last. She's still at the back of the shot, and Aidan Coleman doesn't look to be in any particular hurry on her, but then he gets a great run round the bend into the home straight. Now, I know there's only four, but that also makes it more, I suppose you should be thinking, the other jockeys should be more aware of everybody is in a small field too, but they gang up in off the home bend, but a split appears, and Marie's Rock gets a great run through, going to the second last when the dash is on. She wraps that, but does pick up really well then and Get a Tonic going to the last, and I think wins a little snugly in the end for, you know, for Connections. I don't know, Gary, there's been standout renewals of the Mayor's Hurdle at the Cheltenham Festival. I'm not certain this time around that it is a vintage renewal for the Close Brothers Mayor's Hurdle. Did you have a fancy in it, or could you see Marie's Rock getting involved?
Don't particularly fancy Marie's Rock. I think Connections would have been pleased by what they saw, obviously, at the weekend, especially after what happened at Kempton previously, where she was obviously very unlucky, got hampered by a fall, or went well fancy for the Lanzarote. It is a tricky race. I don't think necessarily your governor has maybe got as strong a hand as you'd normally associate with in this race. Burning Victory is interesting. If she can belatedly transfer the pick of her flat form to hurdles, and I say that, I know she's won a Triumph Hurdle, but more so maybe an open company. I've been a little bit disappointed with her at times, but it was more like it at Leopardstown last time. Royal Kahala is potentially the best horse in the race for me, Ruby. But to me, at Gowran last time, and it was her first go at 3 miles, it looked to me as though she wanted every yard of it. And if the ground comes up with a bit of juice in it, I think that's what I'd be doing with her heading for the Stayers. So look, it might not maybe take as much winning as usual this year at the Mares.
No, but it will be very competitive. I think Stormy Island is the form pick myself, actually, after her win in the Rel Keel on New Year's Day at Cheltenham. But look, I know Lydia's away, but we do have a social poll, and we'll be back with that next. So our Zoom poll, our social poll this week was created by Will Haler, who is all things social and web in Racing TV. And the question he came up with, which got a record number of answers of 2,869 replies. Take note, Lydia, let Will do it from now on. What goes off favourite for the article on the day? So A was Blue Lord. He got 26.9% of the vote. Edward Stone was B. He got 53.4% of the vote. Riviera de Tal, C, 14.9%. And the other was 4.8%. And you were in touch with your replies as well. Patrick Smith said, Blue Lord will be backed off the boards 30 minutes after Dysart Dynamo hacks up. I probably preferred Will Norman's reply when he said, Blue Lord will do after Willie wins the Supreme. Well done, Will. You're covering your bases in a much broader angle there. Lloyd Murphy went for Riviera de Tal's form. Riviera de Tal's form with Fernie Hollow's rock solid. If she jumped the last better, she would have easily beaten Blue Lord. Plenty of chase experience and still getting £7. What's not to like? Not very much not to like. But Gary O'Brien, what do you like in the article?
Well, I was doing a bit of thinking about this over the last few days. And bearing in mind what we were talking about with Edward Stone earlier, and for all that I'm a big fan of the horse, I do think potentially that he could be beatable. I didn't necessarily think there was maybe a standout horse to take out of the Irish Arkle at Leopardstown. As I say, Riviera de Tal probably would have won if she jumped the last, might have been a bit unlucky, but it was going to be a close call either way with Blue Lord. So in the end, Ruby, I've started to come around to a horse who didn't get to show what he was capable of in the Leopardstown race, and that's Hodon Couleur, who had won very well first time out over fences at the Leopardstown Christmas meeting, beating Gentleman de Me. He himself had experience going into that, having run well in the Hot Beginners won by Fernie Hollow at Punchestown. He's since hacked up, obviously, in a weaker race at Thurles. The worry, obviously, is that he fell last time, but you're getting a bigger price because of that. I'm taking the chance that maybe he's the one who perhaps could have a bit more to offer, and gambling that he's the one who might well have come out on top in that Irish Arkle at Leopardstown. It's a long time since a horse won the Arkle on the back of a fall. Can you recall who the last one was?
Won the Arkle on the back of
famous horse.
Famous horse. Well, it wasn't Arkle. King, no. Did he win the Arkle? Or was second in the Arkle? Famous horse. Well, Moscow Flyer.
He fell in the same race. I think he fell at the fifth fence in the Irish Arkle. And yeah, then came out and won at Cheltenham. Hodon Couleur, I think, fell at the third. So he didn't go as far as Moscow Flyer did in that race. And I did a little bit of digging, went through the subsequent renewals, and I think I came up with 8 horses who went into the race on the back of a fall. 2 of them were no-hopers, pretty much, 33-1 or maybe a bit bigger, so I'm not going to count them. But of the other 6, 1 was second and 2 were third. So I've kind of given myself a little bit of hope to cling to there. Now I want you to tell me that he's shown no ill effects at home. He's schooled brilliantly since then, and he's on course for Cheltenham.
I think he has. I think he just took a novice fall, got a fraction low in front, and his hind end got too high, and it just pitched him over. So, to be honest, no, I wouldn't worry me. And if anything, I think he'd have learned from it. He was a horse that has been schooled in his youth in France, where they are taught to probably be much lower, slicker jumpers than they would be taught in Ireland or England, where we teach them more to jump and to get an arch in the backs and to use themselves in a different way. So it wouldn't particularly worry me if I was riding. I wouldn't be at all worried about going there on his back. But what I want to know is, Gary, are you going to put Hodon Couleur up as a bet for the Road to Cheltenham followers?
This is the problem. I'm not sure about the protocol. I'm only a deputy here for Lydia. So
I'll give you the choice. You can put him in my column, which according to Lydia is just reserved for horses trained by Willie Mullins, or you can put it in her column, which is filed under Hopeful, and I should be doing the lottery.
Decisions. Well, it's a Mullins horse, so if you're going to rubber stamp it and endorse it, I'll be happy enough if it goes into your column, as long as you win.
We'll take it on my side. Hot on color for Gary O'Brien in the Arkle, but we'll be back with the bumper horses next. So last week, myself and Lydia pretty much covered everything that happened at the Dublin Races Festival, bar the bumpers. So Gary O'Brien and I are going to look at those, the Weatherby's Champion Bumper Division, Gary. But I think we'll go a little bit further back, and we'll start with the Forgotten Horse, which I think he's the Forgotten Horse, is American Mike.
It's out of sight, out of mind, isn't it? And maybe a touch of recency bias. We're going to come on to the Mullins Battalions in just a second and see some tremendous performances from the likes of Facile Vega and Redemption Day. But American Mike, yes, he is a touch of a forgotten horse. Dual bumper winner earlier on in the season, a horse that came with a big reputation from the point-to-point field. And we'll have a look at him winning the future champions bumper at Nav in a race that Gordon Elliott has targeted with some really good horses down the years. Takes a lead when they jump off here. Nothing unusual in that for one of Gordon's. Don't often see them making a running. Battling Bessie is the mare who takes them along, trained by Peter Fahey. She's a mare that went on to run very well at the Dublin Racing Festival subsequently, but they changed the tactics on her there. This occasion, she made the running. Builds up a lead of about 6 lengths going out on the final circuit of the track. As we see at the home turn, Jamie Codds moved up a good deal closer in American Mike to within about 2 lengths. And this is obviously the really impressive part of the race when they come down into the dip, about 2.5 furlongs to run. With minimal encouragement from the saddle, it seems, he just moves up, takes Battling Bessie, and then through the wings of the last hurdle, just asks for a bit more and puts more and more daylight between himself and his rivals on the run-up to the winning post. I think you were there that day, Ruby. It was very hard not to be impressed by what he did. Likewise at Down Royal, when we were working together at the previous fixture. Did Battling Bessie run to the same level there as she did at the Dublin Racing Festival? My gut feeling is no. But how can you knock a horse who wins as he likes in those two bumpers? And it is worth bearing in mind, the horse of Noel Meads, who was second to him at Down Royal previously, did come out, and I think he dead heated for a bumper at Fairy House next time. So that form has been boosted a bit. He's got a big future. Connections obviously got very high hopes for him, but I just think maybe Facile Vega's form has that bit more substance to it.
Yeah, it might do, but look, that Gordon Elliott is treading a path with American Mike that he has done in the past. It's pretty much the same road as Sir Gerhard went last year. So, look, trainers are creatures of habit, and Gordon is doing with American Mike with what he's done with other horses in the past.
Yes, Down Royal, that's a meeting he loves to start off his good horses at, isn't it? Whether it's the bumper horses, maiden hurdlers, so Mighty Potter winning up there as well, some of the good mares. Obviously, the champion chase, he loves to target that. Galvin ran a blinder in that as well. So that's a meeting where he loves to get them going. I'd imagine the preparation has gone perfectly smoothly. And before the Dublin Racing Festival, Connections probably were thinking they were going to be going there with, if not the horse to beat, one who's going to take a hell of a lot of whacking. But I think the events of that finale on the first day of the DRF might have changed things a bit.
I'd say it might have, and we'll get to Facile Vega in a moment. But next up, we're going to look at last Sunday's winner, which was James's Gate, in the colours of Sean and Bernadine Mulryan. Red cap, navy colours, mid-year shot, Patrick Mullins riding them. And unlike a lot of Gordon's bumper horses, Willie Mullins do make the running if they have to, and no one else wants to. So he jumps off in front, and this race doesn't really change until they get back around to the home turn, when a couple of the opposition have ganged up behind them. That is Secret Artist and Annie Road. But with very little effort, Fat James's Gate just seems to power away down the home straight. He's not a horse that's been in Willie Mullins's overly long, but this is a really taken performance. Obviously, Secret Artist had been disappointing in a couple of runs prior to this Punchestown run, but what more can a horse do in a bumper? And he pretty much wins as he likes. He was really impressive. He came with a huge reputation. He was 5-2 on last Sunday, and he won with his mouth open. The substance of American Mike or Facile Vega's form aren't there, but visually, this horse did create an impression, Gary.
He really did, and I think it was expected to, wasn't it? There was a lot of talk about him before the race. Gordon Elliott actually even mentioned after he won the Grand National Trial with Death Duty that he'd heard at Nace the previous day that James's Gate was pretty much gone by, or words to that effect. That's exactly how it played out. Patrick kept it simple, as you say. The horse seemed to enjoy himself, kept it simple, went from the front. What's the form worth? yeah, it's nowhere near obviously the level we've been talking about with either Fasal Vega, who will come on to, or indeed American Mike. On the face of things, the Charles Burns horse had been beaten a couple of times. It was a newcomer in third, so it's difficult to know, but you guys know when you've got a good bumper horse, and I think going into that race on Sunday, you knew you had a good bumper horse, so it'll be very, very interesting to see where he fits in.
Well, somebody knew, but we all knew we had Fasal Vega, Gary, and I thought he was spectacular at the Dublin Racing Festival. I think he deserves to be the favourite. Should he be odds on or not? I'm not a bookmaker, so I don't know, but this was a hell of a good performance from a bumper horse.
It was one of the performances of the weekend, if not the performance visually, I thought. It just had such a swagger about it. Take it from the start. You can see Patrick's going to keep it simple. He knows he's on the best horse in the race here. Jumps him off in third. Plenty of daylight. Keeps an eye on things. And from four furlongs out, basically, this is where the race really starts to take shape. He moves him a little bit closer. By the time they get to the home turn, he's within striking distance of the leader. And then Sandor Clegane moves up to go for his race. And this was the really impressive part, I thought, Ruby, when the camera shot changed and we're on the tracker cam that goes along with the horses down the straight. Patrick asks him to go, and you just see the way he quickens up and leaves a good horse for dead. Sandor Clegane had absolutely bolted up in a bumper himself at Punchestown. And just as was the case at Punchestown, Leopardstown on his debut effort, he beats a horse who in turn is a long, long way clear of the rest. And they were all bumper winners in behind from third back. Quite a few of them had big reputations as well. To me, it all stacks up. The horse who was second to him in the bumper at Christmas, another one of Paul Nolan's, good horse, Joya Machine. He won well at Navan next time out, despite meeting a bit of trouble that day as well. He runs through the line so strongly. He's obviously bred to be a superstar as well. All the boxes seem to be ticked. To me, it's going to take a Herculean effort, I think, to top him at the Cheltenham Festival. You don't like building these horses up, I suppose, too early. We saw what happened with Kilcrutt last year. He was much more, I suppose, he was equally impressive visually, maybe, in terms of the winning margin, but the race, to me, fell apart a little bit last year. I think this is form that will hold up.
Well, I hope you're right. I think he's a really spectacular individual, but obviously there are more than just the horses we've mentioned, and Willie Mullins does have Redemption Day, who was a winner at the Christmas meeting, as well as Fasal Vega. And look, he sets off in second place in this bumper in Leopardstown at Christmas. And what was different about Redemption Day's performance, maybe compared to James's Gate or Fasal Vega, was how little Patrick Mullins does on Redemption Day. He follows the horse in front, Bravo Team, for most of the race until he gets into the home straight. He gets upside him shortly after turning in, but he never moves. Music Drive comes on his outside, but Redemption Day, Patrick just stays sitting there and he lets him coast down on the bridle, which is pretty un-Patrick-like. Now, the second and the fifth horse haven't run since. The third, fourth and sixth have all been beaten since. But Redemption Day must have been giving Patrick some feel to say he never asked him to go any faster, because usually he does, Gary. He always gives him a squeeze a furlong down, yet he never asked this fella.
That's it. And is that in part due to maybe that he feels the horse is already quite professional in terms of the way he races? Because I'm pretty sure when he does give them a squeeze, usually going through the wings of the last hurdle or thereabouts, the idea is to just maybe teach them a bit more than if they just sauntered home in the bridle. Does he feel, do you know, or have you ridden the horse yourself, that maybe this fella doesn't necessarily have so much to learn?
No, I have ridden him, and I'd say Patrick just felt that he was going that easy, that if something did appear or did come at him, Redemption Day was just going to shoot out from under him. I took it as a plus to say he was that confident on him. And I know he was betwixt and between heading to the Dublin Racing Festival, which one he would ride. Now, Redemption Day didn't run, so he rode Fasal Vega, who blew him away. But it'd be hard to get off Fasal Vega. But it said there's a little part of Patrick Mullins that thinks Redemption Day is a dark one.
And presumably we're not going to see him until Cheltenham either. Does that kind of, I suppose, factor into what I was saying there, that he wasn't one you necessarily needed to give a second run to?
No, he doesn't. He's quite professional. He knows exactly what he's doing. He's by Blue Brazil, Tim O'Driscoll owns him. Yeah, he knows exactly what he's doing. But look, they're the top four in the betting, Gary. Obviously, Mercury is number five. He's only a four-year-old of Willie's that bolted in Gorn and Tiesta's day, but I have read comments from Willie that I expected, where he's not committed Mercury, the four-year-old, to the Cheltenham bumper. He's a big, lean, narrow individual, and I suspect he thinks it's coming maybe a bit soon for him. He's working the next couple of weeks, we'll tell him, but I wouldn't be certain that he will even line up in the race. But it looks a really hot renewal, and for the first time ever on the road to Cheltenham, the cross country race is going to get off the edit floor and into the show just because Lydia's not here. Well, I suppose you should really go to topical conversations that occur in any week. So this week we are going with the Glen Farkas cross country chase and Tiger Owen. It looks set to be his last appearance on the racecourse, and what a servant he has been for Connections. Last year, Gary, he was spectacular. I mean, he picked him up from two out to the last. He just looked, he didn't look like an 11-year-old, did he?
No, definitely not. And it was a good piece of training, wasn't it, to get him back to something like his best. He'd been a bit out of sorts earlier on in the season, but we've seen it before with him, Ruby, haven't we? And obviously, all the talk this week has been about the Grand National weights and the fact that it doesn't look as though he's going to bid for a third Grand National, which is a real shame, obviously, for everyone connected with Aintree and who loves the Grand National. Would have been super to see him there, but it doesn't look like it's going to happen. And it sounds as though there's every chance that Cheltenham next month might be the last time we see him on a race course. So I suppose much will depend on how he gets on, but I don't know about you. I thought there was definite positives to take from his run in a handicap hurdle there at Navan recently. He might well pitch up in the Boyne hurdle there this weekend, the race he's used as a platform before. And I think he'll be going there as a serious player once again.
So do I. I think he could pick up that run in Navan. I'm nearly sure I was working with you. But if you pick him up at the fourth last order, at least towards the back of your shot. But this is the steepest part of the track in Navan as you climb out of the back straight to the top of the hill beside the last ditch, which is the fourth last fence. And then you run slightly down into the home straight, but you climb again to the third last. And if you watch the amount of ground Tiger Owen makes and the enthusiasm he shows to go from right at the back of the pack to just before the turn in, where you're thinking, oh, Tiger Owen's really going to get involved here. And then obviously he gets tired going to the third last and fades out of it. But I did think there was a spark there, and it won't surprise me if he runs a big race in the Boyne Hurdle and even repeats the success in the Glen Farkas cross country. But Gary, you were at Punchestown at the weekend. You did pick out a couple in that Hogan Memorial cross country chase, Midnight Maestro and Shady Operator.
That's right, yeah. Great weekend for JP McManus and the Bulger. Had a great result here, first and second. And this is a race he never tires of winning. And these two horses have met in the past. Shady Operator had a verdict over Midnight Maestro at Punchestown. But I think this was a different day and a different race in the way it played out tactically. We see them jump off at the start, going to the first obstacle, which is a hurdle. Shady Operator's up there in the front end, and Midnight Maestro is pretty much right on his tail. But run it on and come to the 14th fence, or round about the halfway stage, and you see Shady Operator is still there on the sharp end, but Midnight Maestro has kind of slid back into midfield. Watch him out the 17th fence. This is a double hedge, which is a bit like a show jumping obstacle. Watch how nimble he is here. He flies into it, gets his feet up so quickly, comes out running the other side, makes ground on the leaders, and Mark Walsh all of a sudden is almost half taking a pull on him again. And as I say, I think Mark really learned from that previous defeat to Shady Operator. We go to three out. He's still happy to bide his time. He still has a few lengths to find on his stablemate. It's only really when they level up on the run for the final fence that he asks him to make his move. Two of them in the air together at the last. Both jump it really well. And from that point on, Midnight Maestro always just looked to be getting the upper hand for all that. Shady Operator certainly didn't go down without a fight. He's a year older of the two, but I think possibly in this discipline, he might just be open maybe to a little bit more improvement. Now, he did run badly at Cheltenham when he went over there earlier on in the season. Hopefully, with that under his belt, he'll be a bit sharper. He did make a bad mistake that day as well, which really finished off his chance. I think if he can translate the jumping ability he showed at Punchestown, really, to the Cheltenham race in March, he could go very well. And has obviously got this French import called Prengard, who we haven't seen yet. I don't know whether he's going to make it to Cheltenham. He's a much younger horse than the other two cross-country specialists. He could well turn out to be Connections number one, but I think Midnight Maestro will be interesting if he pitches up.
Yeah, Prengard is a six-year-old who has won five of his last six, I think, cross-country races in France. So who knows what he could be. Obviously, you'd have Easy Land. Jonjo O'Neill has him now. And Adja as well for David Cotton. But it looks to be as good a renewal as ever. Personally, I think if Tiger Roll is the horse he was last year, it'll be pretty much a formality for him. He's a different horse around there, Gary. He's won the five festivals. He could make it six, I think.
Still a fair enough price, too, I think, isn't he?
He is a fair enough price. I think looking at the time of recording, he's in around 3-1 ish. Probably not a bad price. Would you stick him in an accumulator or would be going straight on with him, Gary?
Straight on, I think. Rather have it in your pocket, wouldn't you?
And I think you would too. Anyway, that is about all we have time for this week. I want to thank Gary O'Brien for joining us, for stepping in for Lydia Hislop. Of course, this weekend we do have the Ascot Chase at Ascot, the Red Mills Chase at Goran Park, the Kingwell Hurdle at Wincanton, and the Rendlesham Hurdle from Haydock even. We'll have all that to review next week. In the meantime, you don't have a column to read. I couldn't convince Gary O'Brien to write 40,000 words on the Denman Chase. So you can have the weekend off, folks. Enjoy the racing and thanks for watching.
Get money back if your horse is a non-runner for all Cheltenham Festival races. Paddy Power.